So good morning. I'm standing between you, the closing session, lunch, an airplane, or some other kind of transportation. I am not going to talk about the Gulf Region Head Outreach Program in the same detail as my colleagues did, so let me tell you a little bit about what our part, the environmental part, entails. It entails putting in place a Gulf-wide network of environmental medicine specialists, just like myself, to connect with primary care providers in the federally qualified health centers, as you've heard Lisanne mention, and where Joy also does her work, to help primary care providers actually address the questions about what does it mean to my health because I have picked up tar balls, for example. We're also placing, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, community health workers in each of the federally qualified health centers and in community organizations across the board working with the University of Southern Alabama. And lastly, and most excitingly, we are training emerging scholars in environmental health, 11th and 12th graders, alongside faculty in their labs, and whether the lab is in an office place playing with rats and mice, or whether that lab is in the field in communities. And I want to give Dr. Bernstein kind of a caffeine shot. Two of the first nine emerging scholars have been accepted in college. So that's really exciting. I have no disclosures. So what I'd like to do today, though, is take you to a place that is very close to my heart, and that's the issue of culture and cultural competence to the lens of research. And I teach cultural competence, and when I do so, I use myself as an example, and so I ask them to place me. And my students place me in the Philippines and Kazakhstan and Sumatra, but they never really place me where I was born. And my kids, when we go eat dim sum, kind of look everywhere but not at the table and the waiter because they are perfect in using chopsticks. And to use my kids' terms, I stink at it. I stink at it because, and then I will ask for a knife and a fork, and the usually Asian waiter looks at me as if I'm, you know, not wanting to be who I really am. And so little did they know that that's what I grew up with, a knife and a fork. And so what I'd like to do today is talk about a biopsychosocial approach to measuring cumulative effects of stressors, but particularly focus on the role of culture and then look at cultural influences in the most vulnerable period, I believe, of our life, and that's maternal and child health. So as a backdrop, as you heard our colleagues talk, here are seven disasters that we faced, we in the Gulf, and we don't know really how many truly were impacted by the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. We know that on our Gulf Coast, we have a wide degree of diversity, and here are some of those in New Orleans or in Louisiana. To belong, you're asked which high school you went to, and since my high school was in a different country, I unfortunately will never be a real New Orleanian. But there are significant effects, as we know, that are shaping culture and the economic climate in our region, and disasters really threaten not only our history, but also our culture. So if we want to look at, and that's where my research is focused, at the intersect of environmental threats, disaster preparedness, and health disparities, if we want to look at community health, but through the lens of culture, and particularly focusing on maternal and child health, this is what we had proposed, and fortunately, this is what we were funded to do. Our center started last year. We're about a year old in a couple of days. Focuses on particularly disasters and non-communicable diseases, but I want to point out the last component, and that's nutraceuticals. Exciting research is currently going on, not only looking at what are the omega-3 fatty acids that are being missed by our women because they no longer eat the kinds of fish that they used to eat, but what's the role of vitamin D in all that? And so much more exciting stuff to come there. So I'm going to walk you through why I'm so excited about culture and the role of culture in resilience. In 2009, seven different institutions, including MD Anderson and Baylor and Galveston and Miami and ourselves, were funded through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ARRA, to look at and develop shovel-ready projects. And so ours was focusing on what disaster navigators and some of my community health workers are in the room, and I'm really pleased to have them here. What disaster navigator functions our Gulf Coast communities were looking for? And what should those disaster navigator functions be? And so the request of a referral, and the Gulf Region Health Outreach Program is exactly doing that, of linking communities with health resources, of managing all the functions that are going on in terms of health as an advocate for communities, as a communicator so that we can better understand ourselves and to help them vision. But here is what I'd like you to look at. If you look at the four areas of Bayou-Labatre, Plaquemines Parish, Biloxi, and New Orleans, you could see that there are both, this is 2009, both lower level needs and higher level needs. Pay attention to what's going on in New Orleans. This is 2009, where you see that culture is one of the key aspects of what they were worried about. And that's clearly a higher level need if you compare to food access in Plaquemines. And so you'd see that transition into the importance of culture as we get through disasters. And so you've heard from others about all the dimensions, the multiple dimensions of disaster, including the psychosocial well-being. But I would like to focus on that cultural continuity to make sure that we don't lose our fisher folks, to make sure that the family business still exists. So if we look at culture, both from an individual and a community perspective, we want to understand how communities really make meaning and take strength from particular domains in culture, and how do communities really deploy their cultural assets. We are doing that through an existing consortium that we were funded to put in place by NIEHS. Ours is looking at a transdisciplinary approach on Gulf resilience on women's health. Here are the overarching aims, and you see throughout the overarching aims is the notion of lifetime adversity. So the first project, we are now at 900 women. We are going to 1,200 women, and we have 300 babies. And those are the 300 babies that we're currently focusing on, and Dr. Bernstein is a member of our external advisory committee for that. But Emily Harfield, an epidemiologist in our school, is looking at the health and mental health of women of reproductive age, both pregnant and non-pregnant women, and I mentioned the issue of lifetime adversity. Jeff Wycliffe is going fishing with them, and I'm not allowed to go, but he is taking the fisher folk and looking at culturally distinct communities, both our Vietnamese communities as well as our Bayou communities. And he's addressing the two issues of, is my seafood safe to eat and is my air safe to breathe? So we are going exactly towards what communities were asking us for, the third question being, what will happen with our offspring? So this is my research project, and my research project of the three RO1 type projects is focused on looking at how do we build sustainable community-driven health in particularly one very vulnerable subgroup, and those are WIC-eligible women. Anna Hassan is here as the project manager for that project. So what we did is we know that embedding community health workers works, right? It helps, it improves health. What we did is we actually linked mobile health technology with our community health workers. So yes, our community health workers have iPads. I do not have one. And they are paperless, and that's how they do their work, connecting bidirectionally with our women. And so out of all of these three projects is what we're building on. But the one thing that I'm taking you back now to 2006, right after Katrina, when we did our breast cancer research, we were finding something that's quite remarkable, and we're reanalyzing some of the data in our current project. Is when we looked at and used the scale of ethnic experience, and we looked at low-resourced and high-resourced communities, both white and African-American, in the scale of ethnic the ethnic experience and in the area of discrimination, although we see an increase in this, the feeling and the experience of discrimination in our African-American community, it is below the national average. So we're trying to understand what that means. Does that have something to do with our culture in the Gulf? We don't know that answer. And of course, the first thing you think about is, well, you didn't analyze the data correctly. So you go to your biostatistician and say, make sure I did this right. No, we did. And so this is a question that has been nagging me since 2006, and maybe I'll have the answer soon. And so SAMHSA provided all of our four consortia administrative supplement 2 days before the end of the fiscal year, yes, to look at indicators of stress during pregnancy as predictors of maternal and child health outcomes, to look at the role of maternal want in that, particularly in that first year, and to help us, and that's my baby, extending an anthropological model of psychosocial stress and maternal and child wellness that focuses on the modifying effect of culture. So what we're doing is taking this biopsychosocial model and translating it into the real world environmental health research at the front line. So if you look at this model of a prenatal stress, we know prenatal stress affects parent-child relationships, ultimately affects child outcome. How epigenetic changes, and we're going to focus on telomere length and DNA methylation efforts, how epigenetic changes relate to that and how we can measure that at the earliest possible time is what we're after. Because if we can validate it prenatally and in the infant as well as the mom, we can actually use these validated markers later in life as we follow the cohort longitudinally. So that's the design. Now, in all of this is elegant, you know, mechanistic work. How does culture fit? So in addition to looking at DNA level changes, we have a series of instruments that we're going to implement. Alan is going to kick me out in a minute, so I'm going faster. But what is exciting about this is we're working with the guru of culture, resilience, and health, Bill Bressler at UAB, who joined us to do what is called a cultural consonance and cultural consensus analysis. And I'm learning these terms as we go. So the idea around cultural domain analysis for anthropologists in the room, this is, of course, you know, ABCs for you, not for environmental health scientists like me. It's a set of looking at identifying a series of domains and analyzing that on a multidimensional scale. I read not too long ago the mixed method analysis, the mathematical model for that, it's not less than any integrated biostatistical model where the equation is the whole page. You remember those from high school? So followed by the domain analysis is a consensus analysis where you then say of how many of the domains really fit. How many of those really explain what the community is? And then lastly, you take those domains and then say, well, how does a community fit within those domains? The lower the cultural consonance, the higher the stress. So that's what Bill found, not only in the U.S., but also particularly in his work in Brazil. So what we will do is define for family life, as you've heard, family is kind of our niche, our focus, what the domain of culture is, what the underlying elements are of this domain, what the structure is of this domain, and is there consensus, and how much of consensus is there, and what's the gap in consensus, and how does that gap in consensus influences prenatal stress and ultimately early childhood development. So in figuring out where we're going, I'm hoping perhaps culture could be our highway to untangle this resilience gem. And I couldn't do this without the team, and here are the members of the team. So thank you very much.